Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
It's Eddie Trunk. Time for another edition of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New every Thursday via podcast1.com and, of course, iTunes. Thank you for downloading, streaming, favoriting, whatever you do. Thanks for connecting with me and listening to the podcast each and every week. Interviews on this podcast are courtesy of my daily Sirius XM show on 106 volume, which you can hear live Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, replaying every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, and on demand on the Sirius XM app. So if you're looking for a lot more interviews, a lot more interactive talk and calls, be sure to join me on Volume and check it out every single day. Although the interview for you this week actually comes from the sixth show I do live on Sirius XM every week, this one from my show on Hair Nation on Channel 39. And it's a great conversation I wanted to bring to you from that show, because he's always a lot of fun to talk to. I'm talking about Jesse James Dupree from the band Jackal, Full Throttle Saloon, all that good stuff. We'll get to that in just a second. Do want to remind you, if you're listening to this show on post day, which would be 29th of March? Yeah, 29th of March, a Thursday, because we're new every Thursday, and you're in the Dallas area, come on out tonight to the Guitar Sanctuary in McKinney. I'll be doing my live Q&A Stump the Trunk speaking show. Should be a lot of fun. $20 to get in, includes free beer for the night. How can you beat that? So if you're in the Dallas area, McKinney, Texas, Guitar Sanctuary, theguitarsanctuary.com for more info and tickets, or link on eddietrunk.com. Get the tickets at the door. Come on out. We'll have some fun this coming Thursday night. I'm also there Friday afternoon from 1 to 3, broadcasting my volume show live from Guitar Sanctuary with John Five as my guest. Should be a fun couple of days there in the Dallas area at the Guitar Sanctuary, McKinney, Texas, tonight, Thursday night, 8 o'clock for my speaking Q&A show, which does require a ticket. Friday afternoon, 1 to 3, totally free. Not a performance, just hanging out doing the radio show. And John Five has got to get right out of there to get to his gig that night. So no meet and greet, no performance. But that is free if you want to come down. Thursday night, I'll be hanging, and it should be a lot of fun. So, anyway, I am excited to bring to you a great podcast with Jesse James Dupree of Jackal. Sorry, I got distracted there for a second. Text messages just seem to never stop. And this one is a lot of fun because Jesse James Dupree is a character, and he really, in a lot of ways, is a very underrated frontman, singer, and performer. And Jesse James Dupree is dropping by my show. He was in New York City because he wanted to come by. He has his son has a band, and the band is called Wayland. And I didn't even know his son had a band, but he told me his son does. And he was coming by to check out his son's band. And I said, why don't you come up and hang out and do the show? So he said, yeah, you sure? I said, yeah, of course. It's always great to see Jesse. And he was willing to do that. So he dropped by. His wife was in the studio as well. And I didn't know he was going to hang out for like an hour and 15 minutes. We had a great conversation about all kinds of stuff. I mean, he rides bikes. He's just a total, total trip. And like I said, if you've ever gone to see Jackal live, they are just a no BS, in your face, kick-ass rock band, guitar, bass, drums. They bring it all the time. They have pockets in this country where they do extremely well. And he's become a friend over the years. He, of course, had the Full Throttle Saloon show. He's still involved in that. He has a line of bourbon, and he's just always fun to hang out with and always a lot of great stories as well. He also was an early believer and supporter and produced early records from the band Blackberry Smoke, who are starting to emerge and do quite well. So Jesse's involved in a lot of things, and we'll talk to him about some of that in the interview you're about to hear. Also sitting in with him, my friend and comedian Dean Del Rey, who sat in that day with me, and you'll hear him chiming in throughout. So enjoy Jesse James Dupree of Jackal coming up in a matter of minutes. Also, just a reminder, if you're shopping on Amazon, go to amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. Start all your shopping there. Connect with me on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. EddieTrunk.com is the website. You will see all my appearances listed there. Like I told you tonight, if you're listening on post day and tomorrow afternoon, Guitar Sanctuary, McKinney, Texas. Next week, April 7th in Milwaukee, I will be at the Pottawatomie Casino Northern Lights Theater hosting Saxon, Black Star Riders. April 13th in Tulsa at the IDL Ballroom hosting LA Guns. April 22nd in Houston hosting Tom Kiefer, Proof Rooftop Lounge. And then don't forget, of course, M3 is coming up. Rocklahoma is coming up. The Ride for Ronnie, the Dio charity event, May 6th in Encino. All the information on all this stuff is on the homepage of EddieTrunk.com. Come out and see me. New stuff being added all the time as well. So very brief open today because I want to get to the interview with Jesse. You're going to enjoy it. It's coming up next on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, here are some useful car tips you might not be aware of, like a coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior, removing excess weight from your car. That'll improve gas mileage. And you can place your key fob to your chin. That will increase its range. Pretty weird, right? Here's another tip you also might not know about, and that's that TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With the certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Hey, podcast listener, this is Rob Cisternino. I'm the Rob, and Rob has a podcast, and the new season of Survivor is just getting started, and we've got new episodes for you 5 days a week. Join us for interviews with your favorite past Survivor players and this season's losers right after they get their torch snuffed. Listen free to Rob Has a Podcast, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. And if you like the show, why not share it with a friend or leave us a rating and review on iTunes?
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome back to this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast, and we have for you my interview, as promised, with Jesse James Dupree of Jackal. We talk about all sorts of great stuff. Comedian Dean Del Rey sitting in as well. Enjoy. It's always fun to talk to Jesse. Here we go on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast. Great to see you, man.
Yeah, you know, it was a turnaround because I just got off the tour bus. We went Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, a few shows up there, and then the bus dropped me off in Indianapolis about 6 o'clock this morning. Flew into the city, and
so you literally just ended the Jackal tour.
Oh, just this week's worth of dates. I mean, we're right back out.
We're never out. We never go home.
We got a great year. I mean, we're probably going to have the best year we've ever had as far as just a lot of exciting dates and
is that right?
And a lot of them. Yeah, we're going to work more this year than we did last year, and we did over 100 shows last year. So
you still got the place in Sturgis? It burnt down.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. You know, we have 600 acres out there now. The original Full Throttle Saloon was on 30 acres.
Right.
And it burnt down. It was $10 million worth of ashes and a lot of hurt feelings. I mean, because there was no insurance or nothing.
Wow.
And so we licked our wounds and, you know, was thankful that nobody got hurt or killed,
yeah.
And which was the main thing. And then we moved down the road, bought 600 acres. We have an Olympic-sized swimming pool.
Well, I was there last year, remember?
Yeah, that's right. That's
I was just telling...
For about 2 seconds.
I know, but you were going on stage, but I was just telling... It's funny because this is all... This is so weird that you're here, and I didn't even know you're going to be here today because... I'm all sunburned and people are trying to figure out why, because I was in Mexico this weekend at this thing with Zac Brown Band and
Blackberry
Smoke for this new TV show I'm doing on Access,
and you
which is coming
out, there,
out in
right?
July. And we shot it the very first episode of the whole series premiere, which is going to be July 1st at 9:30 Eastern, is going to be the Sturgis episode where I cover Sturgis and went to see Jesse.
We were about to go on stage and Eddie calls, man, I've got, you know, we're stopping by. We're only going here about 10 minutes. Can you, 15 minutes or so? And so we ended up swinging up there and
amazing and, spot though, man. That was like, we went in the main room and everybody's coming
little
at you.
Quick little tour. Yeah.
Wow.
You walk inside the new Full Throttle Saloon because we didn't want to try to replicate the old Full Throttle.
Right.
I mean, that was a moment in time and what a special place. 2 decades of just beyond Thunderdome crazy.
Was that yours from the beginning?
Yeah, it was Mike Ballard. Mike Ballard and I met 20 years ago, and he was literally building the original Full Throttle, and we made fast friends and then ultimately partners on just about everything that we do. And
right.
But we didn't want to rebuild the original throttle, and Mike was just thinking about it. He goes, I want to make a tribute to what made America great. And Eddie saw this. You walk into this place, and it looks like the Industrial Revolution threw up inside this. I mean,
wow. It's cool, though, man.
It is so badass. It's like all of these old turn-of-the-century machines, big dinosaur machines that are just, I mean, just unbelievable to look at, like something out of one of those damn Transformer movies or something.
Yeah.
They're everywhere, and they're up on these pedestals and lit up and turned into bars, and there's go-go dancers on top of them, and it's just, it's the coolest, and everybody that walks in, I mean, the bar took thousands of hours to make. It's welded together sprockets and nuts and bolts, and it's just the coolest thing. And then you flow out into the courtyard, and there's like a big moonshine truck, you know, moonshiner's truck up behind the main bar out there in the courtyard. And then you stroll out, and then there's all these vendors in the largest stage in South Dakota. I mean, it's just
only open two weeks a year.
And that's on 50 acres of the 600. In addition to that, we got a helicopter pad. We've got 50 caliber machine guns. You can blow up cars. We've got a restaurant, a grocery store, an Olympic size swimming pool. We got belly flop contest, homemade bikini contest, Elvis impersonators, Johnny Cash impersonators up at the pool. You got Blackberry Smoke's playing at the. We got Steel Panther this year too.
Wow.
We got all kind of crazy
Wait
stuff.
A minute. Do you have any stand up comedy?
We have had stand up comedy in the past,
because I'm a comic man.
Well, you get killed out there, man. No. You're gonna get killed.
I've been going to Sturgis for 10 years.
I'm not saying you're not a good comic, but man, those guys want to rev their bikes and hear music. I would not. I don't care if you're the greatest comic in the world. I wouldn't want to go up in front of that crowd.
I take the challenge. Well, I've been going there so many years.
Yeah, you should. I'd love to have you come down. You come check it out. We have 300 cabins. We have a RV, 600 RV hookups. We got tent camping for days.
Because when I was with you, and we got there really late because we were covering stuff over the Buffalo Chip, and when we came over to cover your thing, and then when we got over there, it was already dark. You were about to get ready to go on.
Yeah.
So we did a quick run through. We shot a few things, but the thing I said to you was, those grounds are massive. Like, you're just like, you're scratching the surface. Oh, what you're going to be able to do there.
You're right. I mean, it's the things that we're already doing. We got a flat track out there where we're racing pre-1920s Harley Davidsons that we did it last year, and we're doing it this year.
Oh, like the Rolling Sands stuff?
Yeah, like the Sons of Speed, Billy Lane.
Yeah.
Billy Lane's just, I mean, he's a legend anyway, and just a great guy, and he's a partner of ours out there doing that. And then, like you said, the Bear Butte behind us, just the beautiful scenery to wake up to every day. It's called the Pappy Hoyle Campground. We oversee the name of Pappy and Pearl Hoyle for the family, as they passed away now. But they started that rally 78 years ago.
Wow.
And a lot of people don't realize, I mean, you know, that it's been going on that long, and they don't realize the spirit of it. And there's people that come from all over the world to this thing.
Yeah.
You know, and we're the official campground of Harley Davidson now.
Oh, wow.
And for the last couple of years. And so Harley Davidson's doing all their demo rides out there. It's where you get your official Harley Davidson hog pen. If you're coming to Sturgis, I mean, there'll be 75,000 people that'll come just to get those hog pens. And but Harley, and if you're a Hog member, you get preferred pricing and stuff. You know, for staying at the campground. And,
I've been going there for years. Yeah, man, I love it.
PappyHoyleCampground.com is where the campground side, and then the Full Throttle Saloon's right there.
Dean, you ride? You go out to Sturgis?
Yeah,
I've
been riding 35 years. Like I ran over last year. That was pretty cool.
Is that the first time you've been ran over?
Yeah.
What do you mean you've been run over?
Some meth head ran me over. Look at this arm ripped off here. Broken.
Like, with a car? Hit your bike?
Yeah. What all damage did you get done?
Okay, here's what I got. I was riding on the 110 freeway in L.A. Some woman just carjacked an Escalade and ran me over doing 70 miles an hour. So I got broke ribs, dislocated shoulder, ripped my arm up. And look, you can see this right here. Just missing tattoo. And smashed ankle. But I lived. I couldn't believe it. And the only reason I couldn't believe I lived.
Her front tire fell off, or she would have ran me over.
Yeah.
I was in the middle of cotton fields right across the state line in Alabama shooting a pilot for a TV show. And we were across the state line, and I was on this vintage white heritage Softail that I've got.
Right.
And it was the first bike I ever owned. I mean, and I love that bike. And, I'm going down this this two-lane road, cotton fields on each side of me, on both sides, and I'm waiting on a friend of mine to catch up. His wife had jumped off the back of her bike to go in and use the bathroom, so they didn't pull out right behind me. So I'm just kind of trucking down there, only doing about 30 or so, 35 miles. I'm just waiting on them to pull up behind me, and I see a car come round in my rearview mirror, come round in the corner, coming up on me. And he's coming on me fast.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, and we're heading west, and the sun is setting, you know, just blinding us in the eyes.
He just
doesn't
see it.
And so you know, he's coming from behind me, facing the sun. And I say, I'm just going to get off the road, and there's a little farmhouse. So I throw my left arm out to let him know that I was making a left turn. He thought I was telling him to go around me.
Oh.
So as soon as I leaned into the, you know, I just whooped it into, you know, to make that left turn into that driveway. He was behind me. He floored it, hit the gas, hit me about same 65, 70 miles an hour, hit me, sends me flying, like, you know, just like when I was shot out of that cannon. I'm flying through the air screaming, mother, you know, just screaming through the air and trying not to hit my head when I land.
Right.
And the bike's, you know, flying in one direction, I'm in the other. And I land, and I was so mad. And of course, he was scooting on down the road, and I jump up. I mean, I'm ready to whip this guy's ass, and I jump up, and as soon as I jump up, I realize, oh, shit, my leg's not there.
You can say shit.
So I reached down, and my pant leg were ripped all to hell, right?
Because
the bumper just hit me right in the leg, and I ripped my pant leg open to see if my leg was still there, because I was serious. It wasn't there.
Yeah.
It was just mush, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And about that time, the adrenaline, you experienced this.
I mean, it's crazy.
The adrenaline just goes down.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, from the top of your head, you can feel it just get out of your subside, you know. And as soon as the adrenaline went away, I realized I couldn't breathe, and I just fell back on the road, and I lay there. And next thing you realized,
you weren't kicking anybody's ass.
Yeah, I wasn't kicking nobody's ass. Hey, that guy kicked my ass. So, you know, the rest of the story is, so the guy, you know, the ambulance shows up, and I'm screaming, don't cut, because I had these custom boots on that I loved, and I'm going, don't cut my boots off, you know, and they go, sir, we got to cut you. And they cut my clothes. They'd already cut my clothes off of me. I mean, I was bleeding, I mean, you know, the whole side of my whole
life. How long ago is this?
This was about 4 or 5 years ago. Yes, and I'm out in the middle of confidence, and I'm going, don't cut my fucking boots. Don't cut. And then my buddy Dwayne had finally showed up. I said, Dwayne, pull my boot off. And he goes, Jesse, they ain't gonna let me pull your boot. I said, pull my fucking boot off. And so he pulls my boot off, and I just black out.
Yeah. You're hoping your leg didn't come off. I didn't want
my boots cut. So they set my bag. My clothes were shredded in a little plastic bag, and my boots set beside me in the ambulance. And they carried me across back, because I didn't want to go to an Alabama. I wanted to go back to Georgia. So they crossed the Georgia state line, and they carried me to a hospital that doubled as a veterinary clinic.
Oh, my God.
Like the mob, when they don't want to take you and get shot by the
So I lay there on a board. I lay there on a board for like 8 hours, you know, thinking, you know, because they were making sure that I wasn't bleeding internally and such. And then I get home and I'm in a gown and my, you know, and I'm all bandaged up, and I was in bed. The story goes on from there, because we were, you know how this is when you're shooting the TV shows, you've got deadlines for the pickups and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I get home. And Penny's there. She's freaking out because, you know, I look like, and I'm, you know, because my arms broke, my whole side, and my legs in a cast. And the next day, I get in the back of Nigel's SUV, and Nigel drives me to Myrtle Beach, because We had a show that night.
Of course you did.
So I go to Myrtle Beach and I'm, you know, and I'd refused to take any pain medication. Even when I was in the ambulance, I refused any medication because I was afraid I'd wake up and my leg would be gone. I didn't want them to cut my leg off.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't take any medicine. And they could not believe that I wouldn't take pain medicine. And I was going, no, because I did not want them to cut my leg off, and which thank God they didn't. So they get me over. And let me tell you this. So the hospital, when they're letting me out, I said, what about my arm? And they said, oh, the x-rays say you're fine. And I said, hell, my arm's broke. And they said, no, you're fine. Your arm is, your leg's the one. And they'd put a cast on me and stuff. So the next day, Nigel's driving me to the House of Blues in Myrtle Beach because we'd made a big deal about us playing an annual show up there. I'm in the back, and the phone rings. They, hey, this is the hospital that you were at last night. You need to go to the doctor. Your arm's broke. And I'd already stopped and got a splint for it. So I get up there. I took a couple. That was the first pain medicines I took when I was up there.
Yeah.
I got through that. The next morning, they carried me to the, I played that show about an hour. Got about an hour, and then I was done. I go to the airport the next morning, fly to New York City. Nigel puts me on a plane. Delta carries me in the wheelchair and stuff. They get me up to New York City. The network picks me up, puts me up in the London Hotel, which is a nice place.
Nice. Right? Yeah.
I sat there room service that day on the Sunday, get through with that. Go the next day, shoot the stuff at the network that I had to shoot for all their promo stuff, and they were shooting it to where you couldn't tell that I was all banged up, right? Just throw my leather jacket over, and they would shoot me from the waist up. So then they take me to the airport again, fly to Los Angeles, get there, and I'm doing the pickups, you know, the last minute changes on the pickups of the show. I get about halfway through the day, and I looked at my partners, and I said, dudes, I'm not feeling good.
Amazing you made it that long.
Yeah, so I got back to the hotel, and I just opened the door and fell in, and I was so sick. Yeah. So sick. And I laid there in the floor of that hotel room for about 6 hours or so, and then got up and went back down to the LAX airport, got on a plane, flew into Kansas City. Johnny Dare picks me up, takes me to the emergency room. They damn put me in there, start shooting fluids in me. When they had put that cast on my leg, they'd not cleaned out the cuts and stuff. And I had an infection. And so I ended up staying at the hospital. And then so I laid up on Johnny's couch for a day. After that, back at his house, it would take an antibiotics and all that kind of stuff. And then we played in front of 27,000 people at the Kansas City NASCAR track for the NASCAR race. We played that, and I had DMC there. I had from Run-DMC.
Sure.
I had all the Clint Boyer and all the guy NASCAR guys, and we had a big night plan. And I was as fucked up as a goose on pain medicine.
had no problem taking it at that time, right?
And then I went home and went to bed for what, 2 weeks.
I mean,
it was the dumbest thing I ever did was that run. It was just because I was in so much pain.
I did the same thing. I did stand up right after. I was like,
funny.
And so I was standing there, and then people were looking at me. It was a sold out show, and I was like, "Yeah, I kind of got ran over today." And I raised my shirt, and it was all raw, and the crowd went, "Ooh!"
Yeah,
and there was no bouncing back from that.
Nothing funny about that.
Yeah, I am proud.
I am proud to sit here and say I am a big pussy that's never been on a motorcycle in my life.
Yeah,
that's why both of your stories. I got no story like that. And I don't want one like that.
I was riding my bike with my cast on my leg. We went back out. Penny and I and a couple of us went back out to the farmhouse and found the place where I got hit. And we pulled in, and I was showing her what all had happened and where it was and everything. And this old man comes out of the farmhouse. And he comes up, and I said, hey, you know, no big deal. I had an accident out here, a while back. And I was just showing my wife, you know, where I'd had the wreck. And he goes, on a motorcycle. And I said, that's right. He goes, I thought you was dead.
Oh.
And I said, no, I'm here. And he looked down at my leg. He goes, I see you still got your leg.
Wow.
And I said, yeah. I said, thank God, you know. And he goes, I thought you was dead.
Wow.
And I said, I said, they took care of me. I said, I was surprised at how quick the ambulance got here to get me, you know. And he said, son, you laid there for the better part of an hour.
Wow.
Oh,
and I didn't even know. And I said, really? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, I thought you was dead.
Hit and run like me, right?
Well, the guy hit me and ran. And then my partner, who was riding with me, he bolted down and caught him and brought him back.
He got to jail?
Yeah. No, the guy said he was coming back. And I mean, but the police came and.
When I got ran over, here's the weirdest thing. I was just on a highway, just laying there like, whoa, what happened? And then this guy walked up to me and he goes, man, are you okay? And I looked up and it was my best friend. And I thought, oh, you see your friends when you're dead. That's all I thought. Because why was he there?
How did he happen to
be there? He just happened to be coming down the highway 2 minutes behind me going somewhere in L.A. What are the odds of that?
That is
crazy. And he threw me in the car and took me to the hospital.
Were both of you guys wearing helmets?
I was.
Jesse? I was wearing a skull cap.
I wear full face in L.A. It's crazy.
Yeah. I was wearing just a, it was not even, it's not even a DOT approved skull cap.
But I got full face.
But when I was going through the air, you know, I was keeping my head up because when I knew I was about to hit the ground hard, but yeah, I didn't hit my head, thank God.
It's amazing how much it hurts.
I tell you something, basically sound like a total puss.
Yeah.
People ask me if it was bad. I say, yeah, it was really bad, but I got to admit, it's not as bad as the bicycle wreck that I had. And that's the truth. My wife and daughter got me like this mountain bike because my daughter was just getting into riding bicycles. She's getting into riding bicycles. She wanted me to be able to go riding with them. So for Christmas, they get me this little mountain bike thing, and my daughter wanted to see me ride the thing. And it was on Christmas morning. So I go out of my driveway. You go out of my driveway and make a left. You're on 16 square miles of National, you know, Civil War Battlefield Park and stuff. And so I wanted her to see me riding the bike. So I go down the driveway, and I get out onto this little sidewalk, and I just go up just barely out of sight. And I turn down in this parking lot that they had just blacktopped for the museum property. And I think I'm just going to whoop down in this parking lot, make a U-turn and head back to the house. And I go down and I round this little island of trees that they had there. And I round the island, and there was a big patch of ice.
Your wife has her face in her hands. Penny's is here, so we know this is good.
I hit that ice, and that bike flipped out from under me, and I landed straight on my head. No helmet or nothing. And I had a softball-sized knot come up on my forehead. In my shoulder. It messed my shoulder. I would rather take the motorcycle wreck over again than that bicycle wreck.
Wow. How long were you down?
I don't know how long I was there. All I know is I go staggering back to the house. They're in there ready to eat Christmas dinner. And I'm walking in trying to act like nothing's wrong because I didn't want to upset anybody. And they're talking to me. She goes, Jesse, and then she looks at me and goes, oh my God, just starts freaking out, you know. And I'm going, and then I looked at it, but I mean, it was, and then my whole face was, you know, your eyes get
you
black.
You brought the Christmas melon with you, just a big knot.
So I found my place over on the couch and just sat there and just kind of felt sorry for myself on Christmas.
So, how did the tour go, man? You know, Jackal celebrated 25 years recently. You put out that great greatest hits record.
Yeah, yeah, thank you.
And you were out. I mean, you're always out there, but you did a nice run celebrating a quarter century of the band, which I'm sure you never expected.
We got a lot of stuff going on. I mean, we got the 25th anniversary record came out. Jeff Worley wrote, him and Roman wrote a book together. It was Jeff Sackett book and his and Roman's first. It's called Dog Eat Dog. It's a cookbook.
I've got Jeff's first book, which I started reading, which is great.
Yeah, No Filter.
Yes, No Filter, which is perfect for him.
Yeah, and that's a great book, and it's done really great, and everybody that reads it loves it and laughs. And then there's another book called Dog Eat Dog that he and Roman, and what it is, it's learning how to cook and eat and survive on the road. And it's got recipes from all of our moms and wives and just different things in it, but it also tells about things that we make on, because every day they cook on the tour bus every day.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. Penny gave us a crock pot that holds about 10 gallons of food, like an oversized crock pot.
Drains the battery.
So every day somebody, you can laugh about that. I swear to God, we have to run an extension cord out of the bus to inside the venue, or if we don't have shore power, because it blows the breakers on the bus.
Wow.
It's a big ass truck. But I mean, he's also feeding 9 or 10 of us, you know, the between the crew and the bus driver. But every day they all take turns. We wake up in the morning on the bus, and we'll wake up in the town that we're going to be playing that night, and we'll generally wake up at like a Walmart or a grocery store or something, and they all go in, and whoever's turning is to cook that day, they'll go in and you know, like we just had brisket corned beef and potatoes and all that stuff that they cooked a big St. Patrick's Day thing this past week. But so they'll go in, come out with a ton of groceries, and then somebody cooks. And then for the rest of the day, whoever is cooking in the crock, it's a fight. Don't open my crock. Don't take the lid off. Don't mess with the heat. Don't add one. Because everybody wants to do their 2 cents to it. So by the time six of them are going back and salting behind each other or whatever, it's a big fight over the crock pot. The things I've learned over the years I don't mess with the thermostat, I don't mess with the remote on the television, and now I don't fuck with the crock pot. I've got my seat on the bus at the booth where I got my computer and I do my business and stuff, and the rest of them they tear the rest of the bus all to hell, and between the food and whatever activities they got going. going on in the back of the bus. But anyway, out of all that came a great book. You can get it at jackal.com. And I think Ariel said she's going to send you the links to it if you wanted to post it up on your site.
Yeah, of course I will.
It's a great cookbook. Yeah. We should send you one.
Yeah.
You need a crock pot in the studio.
Yeah, I know.
How many guys are in the band?
There's four of us in the band, and then there's three or four on the crew. Four of us in the band, four on the crew, and then a bus driver.
You know, we were talking before you came in, and again, I was talking about how I was in Mexico this weekend, and I don't really know the country world all that well, or I was just shocked. I mean, I had no idea how big Zac Brown Band was. I mean, it's a massive thing. And I talked to a couple of the guys, very cool people. And then I knew Blackberry Smoke, but I met them for the first time and interviewed them this weekend on Saturday. Great guys and big rock fans. And we had a great, and then they told me about the history with you, and that's for people that don't know, Blackberry Smoke is they're really on their way now. They're really an emerging, it's funny.
Two country for rock.
Both the Zac Brown Band guys and Blackberry Smoke, I was saying this earlier, both are cool with the acceptance of country for their music, but neither of them really feel like they're really a country act.
Blackberry Smoke, and Charlie especially, is just such a southern rootsy badass. I mean, he played guitar with me on the Dixie Inc. record that I put out. That's Charlie playing all that guitar, and he's just a mother, man. I mean, seriously.
Is that how you got to know him? Because you're a big part of their story.
They actually Blackberry Smoke, Brent and his brother Richard were in a really heavy band called Nihilist, and I mean, like, really heavy Metallica, back in the early days of Metallica, those guys jammed just as hard as a Metallica. And they used to play with us whenever Jackal was coming up. And I think they might have even played with us the night we got signed by Kolodner. I think they had opened up for us on that. And then they ended up, over the course of several years, they ended up just, you know, kind of getting more rootsy with things. And then they came across Charlie. And Charlie's just, he's from like out in the middle of the sticks and just a stupid, raw, talented dude. I mean, when I say stupid, I mean, he is beyond good. I mean, he is seriously stupid good. I mean, can play anything. Mm-hmm. His guitar playing is phenomenal. And he's a great singer as well. So they came to me and said, hey, we were supposed to go in the studio. I forget, something had happened. And Brent came up and said, you know, we were supposed to do this and it went south. And I got, you know, I have a studio up there. And they said, would you mind helping us out? So I said, look, just bring your stuff in up here and we'll knock it out. And we were just going to record a couple of songs. And I got so hooked on working with all of the guys because we just had a blast, and we ended up recording their first record. I produced the first record.
All right.
The Bad Look Ain't No Crime, and just Sanctified Woman is one of my favorite songs. Just a great rock track. And then I started carrying them out on the road with us, and they opened up for us for a couple of years, and they started plugging into all the Easy Rider bike shows and all that kind of stuff. And
what about Chris Robinson? He had a lot to do with it, right? He grabbed onto him big time, took him on tour. Black Rose.
Well, Brent was always friends with Chris. But I'm, you know, Chris and his brother were always from Atlanta,
right?
But they were on a kind of in another space of Atlanta, so we never did really cross paths over there. I mean, I knew of them and stuff. My tie with those guys was Johnny Colt, who was the original bass player. And Johnny and I, on a couple of different occasions, Johnny and I almost started bands together. Matter of fact, when I started singing with Jackal, it was either that or Johnny and I were going to start a band.
Wow.
But Johnny's he's a great. When I met Johnny Colt, he was living in the back of his Chevrolet and playing at a club called Charlie Magruder's. Charlie Magruder's was a legendary place in Atlanta. You've probably heard a lot of the bands over the years mention Charlie Magruder's in their liner notes and stuff. It was like a real famous place that everybody from Glenn Hughes. Remember whenever you had Glenn and I on your show, mm-hmm. and Glenn and I were talking about Magruder's?
Yes.
I set up with Glenn one night at Butch Weaver, who just passed away like 2 weeks ago. The owner, it's a legendary guy. We got a big memorial service going on for him on Easter, and he's touched, you know, so many people in Atlanta, supported so many young bands and such, and just a legendary guy himself. But I sat at his house one night with Glenn Hughes at a baby grand piano, and Glenn was singing Coast to Coast to just me by myself, playing a grand piano and crying because he'd run out of cocaine.
You'd be shocked the man is still alive.
Earlier that night we were playing up at Magruder's, and I was trying to get Glenn to come up and sing backup on She Loves My Cock. But Glenn Hughes, Stevie Ray Vaughan did his rehab in Atlanta, and he would come out to Magruder's. The guys at Mother's Finest would come and sit in with us. All the wrestlers from the WCW, which was based in Atlanta, all of them were up there all the time, so we got to know all those guys that were at Magruder's. Jason Bonham. We used to pour Jason Bonham out of that place nightly.
He used to hit it hard in his day, man.
Yeah, and you know, and Aaron,
Aaron Lewis?
Aaron Lewis from
Stained?
From Stained.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm in Sturgis, and he was playing down the road from us, and I get this guy comes and says, hey, he said, are you busy right now? And I said, well, you know, I got the Full Throttle stuff going. I said, what's up? And he goes, I work with Aaron. He goes, Aaron was wondering if you could come down and visit with him. He's got to do sound check, but he'd love to see you. And I just knew of Aaron because of the success that Stain had and such, right? And Stain was playing down the road. So I said, sure. So I jumped on the bike and rode down there. And he said, man, he said, I was always the biggest fan of you guys. He goes, I used to live at Riverbend Apartments, and I would come see you guys at Charlie Magruder's.
Wow.
Aaron did.
And we were sitting there. He was about to do a sound check and stuff, or in the middle of a sound check, and he was rolling him a joint back behind the amps right there, telling me all these stories about coming to see us at Magruder's and such. But just a great guy. Magruder's is a legendary place that
still open?
It closed down years ago. And like I say, Butch Weaver just passed away like 2 weeks ago, and it just really set ripples through that whole community down there, and everybody from Derek St. Holmes to you name it, everybody's posting stuff on the Charlie Magruder's wall.
Wow.
and there's a big memorial service for him on Easter. But yeah,
Jesse, for people that don't know too, and I've talked about this many times, because Jesse and I have had some great times over the years, and one of my favorite things is when he busts open a bottle of the bourbon.
The Jesse James bourbon,
which is so good, and now you got those different varieties of it. You still pumping it out? How's it going?
Yeah, we just released 1,800 cases of a single barrel, Jesse James single barrel Tennessee whiskey, and it's a square bottle, blue label with a platinum eagle on it, same logo as such, but it's a higher dollar, because we only released 1,800 cases of it last year.
You make it yourself?
Yeah, we got a distillery in Trimble, Tennessee. It's a little town of about 650 people, Mike Ballard's hometown, and the town was about to go bankrupt, and the distillery got put in a little barbecue restaurant, and now the town is not only not going bankrupt, they built a new fire station and bought a new police car.
No.
But we have we make the Jesse James Tennessee whiskey there, and the Full Throttle Saloon Shine and espresso shots and all that stuff. But if you can find this Jesse James single Tennessee single barrel, grab a hold of it, because there's not that much of it out there right now. We got some more aging, but the barrel house sits about 15 feet from the railroad tracks, so five times a day a train, you know, trains come through five times a day and vibrate the barrels. So if you got a glass of water sitting on the desk and all of you see it, and you know
that. Is that good for it?
Yeah. So on the packaging of the Jesse James Tennessee whiskey, it says locomotive agitator. how can that not be good?
That's
good, because what happens is over the different seasons, because we actually have seasons down south. So you got the cold and the hot and all that makes great bourbon. All's bourbon is Tennessee whiskey. All it is moonshine that's been poured into a charred oak barrel, virgin oak barrel.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So they char the inside of it in a white oak, and then you put the whiskey in there, the corn liquor, and then you got to plug it up, and you let it sit there for 3 years or so.
Or longer,
you know, some of the stuff we got is going on 4 years now, but it sits there, and what happens is over the different seasons and the temperatures and just the vibrations and everything, the liquor gets absorbed into the wood and pushed back out. So you're getting the charcoal flavors and the color, the caramel color and such. And then there's also sugars in the wood, the natural sugars of the oak. So you're getting the sugars, you're getting the charcoal, and then you're getting the flavor of the corn that's in the whiskey on the moonshine.
It's a big deal.
It is.
Another episode that I shot of this TV show was in Kentucky late last year the festival was called Louder Than Life, and it was, the theme of it was also bourbon and whiskey. So they had distillers that, like Jack Daniel's, had a big walkthrough trailer which they showed the barrels and they cut the wood in half. You could see the difference in the wood and the difference between I guess whiskey and bourbon,
the difference between Tennessee whiskey and bourbon is Tennessee whiskey is just charcoal filtered after the fact, so you just run it through a little bit of charcoal filtering, but
that's the only difference between bourbon and whiskey.
It's all bourbon. It's just charcoal.
But it's big
filtered
business. Yeah. I mean, they had a guy there that was like a specialist in it, and he was with a fine wine, you know, swirling it and tasting it and evaluating them. I didn't realize it was as big of a deal as it is to get the high end stuff.
The brown liquor has exploded over the last few years, and people finding, and it's really cool because, you know, when I grew up, I'd wear a Jack Daniel's t-shirt or a Skinner shirt, and I'd fist fight you if you didn't like either one of them. But over the years, those big brands have become everything to everybody. They're not really representing any one, you know, clique of people. And I miss that. I miss that a lot. So, and plus you have to get a second mortgage on your house to go buy a bottle of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be able to put out a whiskey that was affordable and that the logo was great and represented people that bust their knuckle 40 hours a week or more, blue collar America.
Good.
Yeah. And we don't
most important.
We don't have nothing for a profit margin on ours. I won't make any money off of our bourbon in my lifetime. I'm just hoping that I'll, like, three generations down, I can have a very dysfunctional family that fights over them. I've been so blessed with my dreams to come true with the band and the different stuff that we do. And this is a passion play. I'm really, really love doing the bourbon and like you said, I'm learning about it. You know, it's still every day I learn about it. And it's really cool because people are going out and I invite people all the time. Go find other bourbons. Just check it all out. You know, and what I suggest, if you're not a bourbon drinker and you'd like to really learn how to drink a brown liquor like that, what you do is, this is my recipe. What you do is you take a glass of ice. I like crushed ice because, you can pour it over and it's going to melt it down a little bit. Put just another little splash of water in there because that's actually the official way to do it, or the way that the experts say to do it, because it opens it up a little bit. Just a little splash of water, and then plus it melts the ice down if you're using crushed ice, or some people like the hard, the ice balls and stuff. But you put that in there, put that over there, put a little splash of water in, and then make you some popcorn. and you sit there, watch TV, eat the popcorn, and just sip on it. And know, you got to realize, get your mind in the game. You're going to be tasting the charcoal. You're going to taste the sugars in the wood. You're going to taste the corn. And when you know what you're going to taste, and you start really just focusing on it, you'll really start liking it.
I got to tell you,
by the end of the night, you just keep adding the bourbon, and you're on. But you're a bourbon drinker.
When I was at that festival, which was a big rock festival, which was themed, and they're doing it again this year, which is themed about on bourbon and whiskey. After it was over, at the hotel I was staying at, Tom Morello's band was playing. So Tom and I went down to the bar late night at the hotel, and we sat down. We said, we're in Kentucky. Let's get a whiskey. So we said to the bartender was a big fan of Tom. He said, we're going to bring you something really cool. He comes over. He puts two glasses down for each of us, and he just said, just try that. It was the most incredible thing that I ever tasted because it literally hit your mouth and evaporated.
Wow.
And he told me that I still haven't been able to find it yet, but it was, I believe, Old Granddad 114.
Okay.
And it was
some select barrel stuff.
Old Granddad 114, which is 114 proof.
Yeah.
And I never tasted anything like it, and I Googled it.
Yeah.
And I looked, and it said something like it had been discontinued, but there's a couple stores that still have it, and they're redoing it again. And
$3,000 bottles.
I have no idea what it would cost, but this. Yeah. I was like, I never tasted anything like that before. Where as it hit your lips and your tongue, it just kind of like it left a great taste, but it literally like evaporated.
Wow, like gasoline.
I haven't been able to find it since.
I'm gonna send you some of my single barrel. I'll send you a bottle of the single barrel so you can check it out because I'm proud.
Well,
of it.
I love
how much
stuff,
you sell that
man.
For?
I
how
love
much it. Is the single barrel?
How much is the single barrel? The single barrel runs on the shelf depending on what state and taxes. I said around $40.
Well, that ain't bad.
That's actually affordable for a single barrel because what it takes to in how limited quantity and
what single barrel longer.
Single barrel, it can age it can age different lengths of time. And like I said, we got some of the barrel. We got 390 barrels now that some of it's almost 4 years old and such. And it's really great juice. But single barrel means literally everything in that bottle came out of one barrel.
Oh, wow.
So you'll take a
barrel. That's what it means.
Got it. It's a whole price. You can come tour the distiller. You should come do one of your shows at the distiller. We also, I'll tell you what else we just did. If you're coming, but we got to get you back to Sturgis. We need to book Eddie to come visit. You need to come. You need to seriously come and help post some of our stuff at the Throttle. We went up the road about 20 miles north of Sturgis to Deadwood.
I love Deadwood. So yeah. I stay there every time at the Cadillac Jacks. Yeah, my favorite.
Well, you know where Saloon Number 10 is?
Yeah.
You come
yeah.
out of Saloon Number 10, you come two doors down, and you walk into the Bloody Nose Saloon.
Oh, wow.
That's ours.
Yeah.
And then right next door to that, we bought three 1800s buildings right there. Three of the old 1800s buildings. The first one is the the Bloody Nose Saloon. The next one you come into is our tasting room, and then the third one is the distillery.
And we're making Deadwood.
So we got,
That steakhouse there, that 5-star steakhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that place.
Are you talking about the place? Costner's.
Yeah.
You know, they just closed that down.
They did. That place is smoking.
We just tried to put an offer on that building. We're still trying. We love that. It's a beautiful building.
You know why I stay at Cadillac Jack's? Why? It's the only place with underground parking, because when it hails, that hail takes out your tanks, man. It's just ding, 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 ding.
How about let's go one step? When it hails, sometimes people die.
I know. People do that. Hey, remember 5 years ago when I was there, like 3 people died from the golf ball hail, man.
So we had that 1 year that was actually part of the TV show, and the hail did over like $50,000, $60,000 worth of damage to the bar.
Unbelievable.
And there was people that were laying out across their motorcycles, and the hail was just beating their backs, but they were trying to protect their motorcycles.
You could hear it for miles.
Yeah, but they said that there was some, I didn't know anybody or know of directly, but they said there were some people that actually had a unfortunate day there.
Yeah, three people died on that year.
Yeah, but it's not. It's no different than going to the beach to Daytona for vacation, and you never know if a hurricane's going to come through.
Right, or anywhere for that matter these days.
But you can be there. It can be bad weather and rain.
Oh, yeah.
And then 2 hours later, it's sunshiny.
10 minutes later.
Yeah, you're
right. It's crazy. I love Deadwood. It is the spot when you go to Sturgis.
Well, come visit us at the Deadwood Distilling Company.
Oh, I'll come out there and do comedy. I keep telling you.
We got the I just released a brand new cinnamon flavored whiskey that we've been making up in Deadwood called the Devil's Devil, and I've had so many people begging me to release it across the country that I'm finally going to break down and let the first batch of it's going for one of the sponsors of Rockfest in Kansas City.
Oh, nice!
And so we're releasing the Devil's Devil in Kansas City along with the Jesse James bourbon being there. So
we're talking with Jesse James Dupree, of course, of Jackal, Dean Del Rey sitting in a Teddy Trunk here. We got about 40 minutes left to go on the show. I want to grab some phone calls from people, because I'm sure you guys would love to chime in and get involved in the conversation. Maybe a question for Jesse. But before I do that, I wanted to ask you about Jackal plans for the summer. Like, what do you guys have lined up? You just dates? You working on a new record? What's cooking?
We just put the 25th anniversary celebration record out, and it wasn't a year before that we put out the Rowico record, and then these last couple of records came pretty quick, considering as much touring and everything else that we've had going on. And then, of course, Jeff wrote the two books, the No Filter and the Dog Eat Dogs. There's no moss growing on our ass, but we're hitting it and getting it. If you can go to jackal.com, we're putting up dates daily. Just all over the place. We're playing a lot of the festivals and then a lot of
the... You still do the chainsaws?
I got three in my sockets. You know, people ask me all the time, you think you ever get tired of doing the chainsaw?
He's got an endorsement on the chainsaw.
For me, I own that. You know, I mean, it's like, is Angus going to wear a schoolboy outfit?
I've done it with him like 3 times.
Eddie's even broke down and played some chainsaws.
I've done it like 3 times. Hey, on that note, before we go to the callers, last year you played Rocklahoma. Last year I came out, I did the chainsaw with you. Smashed it around, lit it on fire. It's the best. I have so much fun with this guy.
It's all fun. Let me tell you something. People that sit around and overanalyze this, I'll leave it to Bono and Springsteen to write songs that's going to cure cancer.
Right.
I don't make any moans about it. We have a great time, and it's fun. And if you're overanalyzing it or criticizing it, then you're just not, generally I find the people that are not digging what we're doing and at least come and have a good time, they're generally the same people that have a hard time admitting that they masturbate.
Let me tell you this, and I've said this many, many times without this man sitting right in front of me. If you want to see, we're in this day and age, man, of every band so calculated, lighting cues,
so
tons of fake backing tracks, who's stacking vocals on fake tracks, half the shit you're hearing is coming out of the board on some SD chip that's not even real. You want real, in your face guitar, bass, drums with one of the best front men you'll ever see, this guy sitting right here.
Thank you very much.
I mean, you go see Jackal. If people listening haven't seen Jackal in a long time, I defy you to go and not have a great time and probably get drunk, because it inspires you to want to drink a little bit.
It's just a fun, real.
You're gonna get gas on your shoes and sawdust in your hair.
Yeah.
And this guy is like the ringleader of ringleaders. It's so much fun.
I say we celebrate every night. We celebrate the fundamentals of rock.
Let me ask you,
guitar, bass, and drums, chainsaw, if you will, and we celebrate those fundamentals as hardcore as we can. And it's not even about coming to see the show. Literally, the show wouldn't be anything without about the audience. When I tell you that it's about coming to be part of the show, come to a show, and seriously, you'll see the crowd is just as much a
part
of the
show. Now, last year, hold on, Dean. Yeah. Last year, Rocklahoma, last time I saw you, because I host Rocklahoma every year, I'll be out there again this year. And you guys play it kind of like every other year, pretty much.
Just whenever they'll have us. Yeah.
So, last year, you guys play, and I'm sure you know this and heard about this. After you left the stage, Seether came on, and Sean had some not nice things to say about you throughout his whole set. Did you guys ever address that? You had anything
now,
to say
called,
about
you
that?
You called and asked me about that. I
don't know if you were gone and
well,
heard
here's,
it.
Here's my day. I fly into Kansas City the day before. Johnny Dare and I went and got just shit-face plastered that night. Got up the next morning, went over to Worth Harley-Davidson. Picked up a brand new motorcycle, brand new Milwaukee 8 engine, badass. I mean, it's the
greatest, I love it, man.
The greatest motor they've ever
it's
made.
It's incredible.
I mean, it's such a, I mean, I it's like heroin.
I got the road
it's
kid.
Like, it is truly like heroin riding that thing. It's, yeah. I mean, it's a light years above anything Harley's ever done. God moved Willie G out of the way and touched the heads on that motorcycle.
What's it called again?
It's called the Milwaukee 8 is the motor that's in these new Harley Davidsons.
And it's just night and day from the old ones,
it,
man.
It'll scoot. Yeah. And so Ron Spaulding and I, he ends up coming through town. I pick up with him. We drive in the sun from Kansas all the way down to Oklahoma, baking in the sun. I mean, baking, putting sunblock on it, still just cooking the skin off of us. We get down the road, get to the show. Literally, I get off the motorcycle and I'm running late for to go hang with everybody over at Radio Row. So I literally get off, throw my stuff up on the bus, and I run over to Radio Row. I run down, do the interviews that I'd promised that I'd do with everybody. Went back over. It was Jeff Worley's birthday. They had a cake and stuff. They'd been waiting on me to get there, so we give him a cake. We all drank a toast, cut the cake, said hey to Joe Litbag and Mark and the guys from Rocklahoma.
Sure.
Said backstage. I think it's when I first saw you. You came over and said hello. So said hello. I go to the bus, change clothes, and then they said there's – the power blew out. Remember the power?
Oh, yeah. We lost power for a little bit.
They said the power blew out.
The generator went or something.
No. There was a bird landed on a...
Oh, that's right. A bird landed and took a generator out.
The story that I heard was a bird landed on some transformer and blew the whole town
out.
That's true.
I forgot about that because something always happens out there.
So I'm standing there just ready to go, you know, because I'd been, you know, I mean, I'm like serious because as soon as we got through playing... I was going to ride back to Atlanta, like literally. So my motorcycle was sitting right there, and I'm wanting to ride my bike. So the show gets pushed back, because there's no music, no nothing, because it's dead.
Yeah, the power's out.
So finally they come to us and say, boom, the power's on. You hear music. Okay, we're running your intro tape. Great. So they hit the shape. Everything's the same as it was. You got your set time the whole night. We go out. We played our show. And I'll be honest with you, I always – look at whoever's because there's always some guy managing the stage,
right?
And he's always a nervous wreck, and so I always give him a hard time and say, I'm gonna play as long as I fucking want to play,
of course,
just to make him nervous, right?
And it revs up the crowd,
And so I said that, but we played our show that was allotted time wise, and we got out. I go get on my, I change clothes, get on my motorcycle, and I'm gone. The next day, I hear everybody that this guy was losing his mind, and I guess he'd had some drinks or whatever. From what I heard, he'd been, but I heard that he thought that I'd pulled the plug. I pulled the plug on Buck Cherry, stopped their set short because I wanted to play, and then went out and said I was going.
Yeah, drama.
I mean. I kind of like that story better.
I like that story better.
There's a magic one plug. Yeah, I pulled the power. I went in. I played as long as I wanted to. Fuck everybody. And then I got home and everybody's like, what are you doing? And I said, man, I got so much shit going. The last thing I'm worried about is some dude that's had too much to drink thinking that I had that much to do with something I had nothing to do with. And I've just let it go. I mean, and I actually know Corey from Seven Dust was playing with him, and Corey's cool, and we talked, and he thought
you played too long and went over and went into his time, which you did, but I don't think he realized that
everything got pushed back
because there's no curfew at Rocklahoma. It's unlike other festivals; it's in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. So if there's a rain delay or weather delay, really a big problem and get super late, they pick back up when they pick up, and everybody keeps their sets and you play your set.
Thank
so if you end at one, you end at one because because it's not the plan, but because there's no hard curfew, it can happen. Yeah. Now, a couple times things have been rained out completely because, unfortunately, the weather's so bad you can't play at all. But safety is the number one thing. But having hosted Rock Loma every year since it's happened, I know that's how it goes there. But I think that was the issue. Is I don't think he realized that you got on late and thought you were into his time, because I didn't hear much of it, but I caught a little bit of it, and everybody kept coming to me. That guy's killing Jesse up there on the stage. And I was like, man, I think I texted you. I said, you know what's going on?
A lot of people reaching out, they're upset, mad at him about it. And even the people that were upset with him for going off, you know, I just said, man, let it go. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just life's too short. And
that's how I am.
And then you just released a 25-year record.
There's some people that could say something like that and crawl under my skin, and you'd be hard-pressed to keep me from ripping their goddamn
head
off.
Who would that be?
Well, I'm just saying there are people out there. He's not one of them, because, to be honest with you, he could probably come up and blindside me, because I don't know him from Adam's house cat. And I mean that with all due respect. I just don't know the guy. I don't even know what he looks like. But whatever. God bless him.
Let's finish it. We got about a half an hour. You good till the end of the show?
Yeah, man.
All right, so we got a half an hour left. Let's get the callers want to jump in here. So we'll take some calls about anything you want. Jesse James Dupree sitting in. Dean Del Rey is here as well. And we're going to finish up this last half hour and give it to you guys on the phones. Let's do it right now. Why? Let's just jump right in. This is Jimmy, who's listening to us in Virginia. Hey, Jimmy, you're on the air. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, man. Thanks for taking my call, first of all. And I just want to say that, Jesse, listen, I'm an older guy. I've been a fan of you guys for years and years and years. I saw you in Viking Hall in Bristol, Tennessee, probably 25 years ago. For Damn Yankees.
There's a big story behind that show.
I was there, brother. I was down in the front. I remember. Oh my God!
It was Jackal and Damn Yankees.
I was going to believe it was true.
That's a great bill.
What you talking about? If what was true?
The chick you pulled up on stage apparently tried to see you guys.
No. What happened was, that's the story behind that show. What happened was on that show was I was on stage, and we were doing Dirty Little Mind. And we were toward the end of the set, and out of nowhere, that chick she came up there and tackled me. And she was kind of and at the time I weighed about 150 pounds. So I mean, so it didn't take much for her to mow me over, and I just kind of went with it, rolled her over, just kind of, you know. And then the guys that come out running out there, and I was keeping them from.
This is the first album.
This
time?
First album. We were out with
Ted.
Yeah,
it was 92.
It's wild that you mentioned. You were out with Ted Nugent and the Damn Yankees.
Ted Nugent got in trouble that night too for shooting a fiery arrow.
Now, let's back up for a second. When we showed up to play that show in Kingsport, Tennessee, over at Viking Hall, there were church groups outside protesting us being there.
You?
Yeah, they were protesting us.
Satan.
We were the Satan's music. These churches.
Jackal.
Yes, and they were protesting us so hard. So now to pick back up with the story. Uh-huh. So we played that show. This girl comes up and says, she tackles me. I kind of went with it, rolled around with her until the security guy, they pulled her off the stage. I was making sure they were gentle with her, not throwing her back out into the crowd and that kind of stuff. It was all fun. We got through the show and we left. About a week later, I get a phone call from my wife, who's losing her mind, saying that, you know, what'd you do when you do, you know, and I don't know what you're talking about. What'd you do with the girl? I didn't do nothing up there. You didn't assault her. I don't know what you're talking about. Then my attorney ends up calling, Jesse, what'd you do? And I said, I don't know what you guys are talking about. Come to find out, her parents were in the church group outside protesting.
This girl had snuck
into the concert. And when they found out she was in there and that she was up on stage, they ended up going and wanted me arrested.
Oh, rolling with Satan
for assaulting her. It ended up all going away, but it was a scary thing because you don't know in those mountains of Tennessee if they wanted to make an example of you. Yeah.
Well, it's a thank you, Jimmy, for the call. I mean, it's a scary time now because, you know, obviously there's a lot going on in the press and stuff, and there's some validity to some of this stuff, but you also have people out there that are just looking for their attention or trying to take somebody down and get their money. I mean, there was a radio DJ that, you know, Taylor Swift sued him because the picture, she said he grabbed her ass. Yeah. I had the girls, the Canadian band Kitty, that they just put out a documentary, and they were on my show a week or two ago.
And they assaulted you, right?
Yeah. No. But they were like, come on, let's take a picture. And I said, okay, we took a picture. And I'm like this. Yeah. I got my arms crossed in front of me, like, and they've got their arms up on my shoulders and stuff. And then they went to say goodbye. I extended my hand to shake my hand. They go, we're from Canada. We got to hug it out. And I'm like, you got this on film that they're the ones that want to hug it out. Like, you know, you're so worried about everything. Yeah, you don't know.
It's a different day and time. But, yeah, that's wild he remembered that. That was true, and that was a scary day.
How many dates you playing this year?
A little over 100 or so.
Oh, Brian, they're always
about 120
out,
shows, yeah.
Brian in Tennessee. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. How are you doing? I remember, at any rate, Jesse, wanted to let you know, I saw you actually in Johnson City. You were trying to break, I guess, a Guinness Book of World Records. You were on the back of a flatbed truck at a Bennigan's parking lot. And so I took Ben, who was my girlfriend, who's now been my wife for 22 years, to see that show. And to this day, when a Jackal song comes on, she's rocking it out in the car. So
that's good. And then you get laid. So that's good.
There you go.
That's good. You know, we actually set that Guinness Book World Record, 100 shows in 50 days. And I got it because we were doing two shows a day. We were doing a show in the morning from the flatbed truck, and the radio stations would put us somewhere, like he said, it could be a Hooters parking lot. And then that night we would play in a venue.
Wow.
And we were just doing two shows a day, 100 shows in 50 days. And I got to tell you, the morning shows were wilder than the night shows.
Wow.
People were coming unglued. I mean, I remember we pulled into one place one time.
I
suffered from exhaustion when that was over. But I'll tell you the craziest thing, and this is I'm not trying to be hokey or nothing, but I'm going to tell you a storybook ending for that tour was Bubba the Love Sponge was hell-bent that the 100 show had to be in his market.
Which is Florida, right?
Yeah. And so we were working our way down to do the last show with Bubba's station in Tampa, and the morning show was in Jacksonville. With a morning show with the Lex and Terry guys up in Jacksonville. And so we were out in this parking lot, and we'd done 100 shows in 50 days. I was literally exhausted. I mean, just I did not know if I was coming or going, because every show was full on, full equipment, the whole nine yards. And we get through playing the show, and we're jumped down, and we're signing people's stuff, and we're the crew's packing it up, putting a big logging tarp over the trailer. It was a homemade trailer, that flatbed that we'd built the stage on, and with a PA and stuff bolted down to it, and everything just stayed bolted down on the stage from show to show. And we were getting ready to go down, and these guys go, "Are you going to go see Ronnie's grave?" And I said, "What? Ronnie Van Zandt, you going to go see his grave?" I said, "Man, I'd love to, but we don't have time. We got to go." And I just, I wasn't going nowhere. And the guy said, "What are you talking about? It's just right there."
Wow.
And I said, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, on the other side of those bushes." And I said, "You're telling me Ronnie Van Zandt is buried on the other side of those bushes?" He goes, "Yeah, man." He goes, "And the rest of them are there too."
Wow.
And I said, "No." And I told the guy, I said, "Guys, let's go see this." So we walk across this long-ass parking lot, probably 200, 300 yards of a parking lot. And we go through these bushes, and there was already like a little pathway carved out through the bushes. And we go through the bushes, and we were literally standing right there at Ronnie Van Zandt's grave. And I'm the biggest pussy. I mean, I broke down and started crying.
I was
exhausted, and then to be there, I mean, just it was a heavy moment because it came out of nowhere.
Was it marked like, is it in a cemetery, or is it just its own thing?
You can go see it. You can get to it. It's rich. I mean, there's all of them.
All
are
the
buried
guys
right
are there.
They're all buried right there.
And
together.
There's a monument. It's
yes,
marked.
Yes.
Wow.
And show number
100 was right there.
That was the 99th one because we still had to go down and do the 100th with Bubba, and we were exhausted, and we were just so seeing the finish line, and these guys just out of the blue said, "Man, you guys gonna go see Ronnie's grave?" And I said, "I don't know what you're talking about, and we don't have time, no, it's right there." And I said, "Are you through those bushes?" Yeah. Is Ronnie? And I'm like, if you'd asked me to bet everything that I had, yes or no, it was that. I said, "No, ain't no way."
Brian, did you have a question you want to jump in with, or I'm gonna let
sorry,
you go?
Sorry, Brian.
So I was just gonna make a couple of comments. So to Eddie's point earlier, I've seen a ton of shows over the years. And you guys brought it, man. Just the raw performance was awesome. And Eddie, still got to get you over to Nashville, man. Wait for you to come this way.
I got to get down there and do some shows. I really do, Brian. Thank you for the call. We got a studio there this year. I'm going to make it a point to get there. So many rock guys live in Nashville now. I got to get down there.
Brian, did you ever go see Ronnie's grave?
He's gone. I'm sorry. I just want to try to get these other people in. So, right. Rick in Wisconsin. Go ahead, Rick.
Hey, Jesse, how's it going?
Hey, Rick. How you doing, brother? Rick's got a
good. I'm one of the old Wisconsin boys.
All right, what part of Wisconsin are you in?
Fond du Lac.
All right. Yeah, we played a big outdoor show there like year before last. It was great.
At, at the wall that weekend, and I was the guy that had the 42-inch chainsaw at festival that you signed for me, if you remember that.
Yeah, I know. It's all some asshole in the crowd coming up. Mine's bigger than yours.
Wait, you bought your own chainsaw to a festival, Rick?
He, what kind of metal detector
did he have? Holy shit, where was the security there?
He was pulling.
I had a 42-inch chainsaw in festival. And Jesse signed the guard and the power head for me.
He showed up and pulled that big me little you stuff.
Oh, my gosh. You actually got it. Wait, you seriously got into a rock festival with a 42-inch chainsaw?
No, a festival store. A festival store.
There's a big chain called Festival Foods. So he walked into
a grocery store and a chainsaw?
He walked into a liquor store where we're selling Jesse James bourbon, and he walks in with a chainsaw.
What, you're doing a sign-in or something? He just comes in like Chainsaw Massacre?
Yeah, and then we did play a festival that evening.
Yeah.
Rick, you still had the festival
at the park that
night. But let me tell you something. The Festival Foods guys, you got to know this, Eddie. The Festival Foods guys, that's a grocery store chain. It's the nicest grocery store chain you'll ever walk in, and they actually sponsor Rockfest and Cadott and Rock USA and Oshkosh.
So they
sponsor all that stuff. The Green Bay Distillery, Mark Scogan and Sean and all that, Sean Sanders, those guys are the coolest dudes. They party their ass off. They own these grocery stores, and they party their ass off.
Wow. We don't have those in Jersey, otherwise I'll look one up for you.
Festival Foods.
All right, Rick, we'll take care of that chainsaw, huh?
I will, and I want to tell Jesse thanks for the honey whiskey, dude. I love it, man. It's a good sipping deal any time of the day or night.
Well, God bless you. Just spread the word and drink it up.
Yeah, it is. I can attest to that. I've had the honey one, too. It's real good. Doug in Indiana. Go ahead, Doug.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, Eddie. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, man.
How you, Jesse, you used to play the Thanksgiving show at a little bar my uncle owned in Fort Wayne years and years and years.
What is that called?
Pierre's.
Oh, Pierre.
That's not little. I've been there. That's a big place.
It's about 1,500 seats.
Yeah, that's not little.
Yeah. Unfortunately, did you know Stan, the guy that owned that place?
Stan's my uncle.
Stan's your uncle? God, man, I loved Stan, man. What a trip. Yeah, we lost Stan a few years back, and the place just, you know, I think they're opening the doors back up on it now. And then we've never had bad shows in Fort Wayne. And we actually, one of the 100 shows in 50 days was at Pierre's, and that he's talking about.
Yeah.
And just a legendary place. Matter of fact, you should know this because your uncle owned it, but Pierre's was voted, like, for years. There used to be a big magazine that would rate live venues in the country, and it was like the number one live venue to play, like out of the whole country.
Like Polestar, someone would give it to him?
I was there a couple years ago.
My FM show, I have a radio affiliate there. My buddy Gasman, he runs the show. He runs my FM show there on the local rock station. Yeah, and I went there like two, three years ago and was a host of the annual Christmas party that they had there. One time I was in Fort Wayne.
Yeah, Gasman actually played when he was first starting to get into radio. He was a singer in a band, and they used to play with us there all the time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was a singer.
He's a Van Halen freak.
They would sing and he'd jam his ass off, and then they'd introduce us and we'd play, and that's a great room. I miss playing that room. It's a lot of fun.
They closed Pierre's?
They closed it, and then the family, I guess some other family members, had opened it back. I'll be honest with you, you'd have to ask this gentleman on the phone. I don't know what the status of it is now, but it's a great place.
Yeah,
do you remember Stan's son Herbie?
Yeah, I remember. I met his whole family. Yeah, just a great the whole family. Yeah,
it is reopened.
Oh, cool.
So Pierre's is reopened.
Yes, and they are 98.9, which is the local FM. I'm assuming that's your affiliate.
Yeah, that's my affiliate. Yeah,
they're starting to rebook shows here again. That was actually my question for Jess. Would they ever consider coming back and playing at Pierre's? Because we've seen you guys last year out at the Rusty Spur, and that is just not really my flavor of place.
I'll just tell you this: you never have to twist my arm to go to Indiana and play ever. That's where they got the best. That's why I married an Indiana woman, and there's nothing like a good corn-fed Indiana woman. I promise you that.
How long have you been married?
Well,
you want to know what she claims?
She and I've been we've been on and off for about 35 years.
Wow!
And,
35 years.
Incredible.
On and off.
Then the marriage has been about 15 years, 16 years plus or so.
Wow. She got a big rock on her finger. Look at that. Jackal pays.
Yeah.
Chainsaws pay.
Chainsaws pay.
Trust me.
I love when those guys would be like, Jackal, those guys still around? And then I'm looking at her ring and I'm like, yeah, they are. Well,
go see Jesse in a place like Oklahoma or in Indiana or one of those parts of the country, and you'll see how legit the business they do is.
Man. How many seaters?
I'll tell you this. I'll be totally transparent with you. You could put a gun to my head and ask me to tell you what bank that we bank at.
Yeah.
And you just have to pull the trigger because I don't even know.
Yeah.
I come home, her hand is out. I have to hand everything. I empty my pockets and then. And
you go back out on the road to make more, right?
And I'm giving an allowance.
That's what I do. Yeah. My wife said to me the other day, she says she feels like she's Carmela Soprano because I come home and I put the envelope on the table and then I go back out on the road and come back to fill the envelope. And when I come back, the envelope's like, where'd all the money go? That's in the envelope.
That's why I'm not married, because I don't have any envelopes.
I'm like Tony Soprano. I got to go out, do the business, come back, drop the money, and go back out on the road again.
I'll be honest with you. Money,
I'm on the road every weekend.
Money is so not the driving force for playing them.
I'm 52 years old, man. I've been on stage all my life. I don't have any money. You think I do it for that? I worked at Harley for 2 years and made more money than my whole life.
No, but that's the reason why. Miserable. But that's the reason why we've all been doing this as long as we have, because I'm in this 35 years this year.
Yep,
I didn't start for money or fame. I started because I wanted to find
music,
an outlet to share music I love with other people. So that's all it was about. Anything that else came along with it, I've been blessed. I've been able to make a great living from it. Don't get me wrong.
Now you're a bona fide doctor in it.
Yeah.
An expert. I mean, go figure. You know, people ask me all the time. They'll say, you ever think about giving it up? You're not going to play anymore? Or, you know, you ever think about just when's enough? And I said, do you ever look down at your penis and say, you know, I think I've used this thing enough. I think I'm going to have this damned old appendage removed. You seem, I think I got another one in me. So.
It doesn't happen, though. There's something in my brain that ticks. It just goes, keep going.
I got another show in me, man.
It's in your blood, man. You don't stop. Mark in Michigan, jump in. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, Jesse, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call, Eddie.
Sure, go ahead, man.
Yeah, I just seen him at St. Patrick's Day in Traverse City, Michigan at Streeters. He put it on, man. He put a hell of a show out there.
Saturday night,
And I was one of the fortunate fans out there that caught part of the barred stool that he cussed up and picked up 2/5 of his whiskey. Life couldn't even be any better. We celebrated 15 years of me and my girl, and I just want to tell you, Jesse, thanks for bringing it. You did an awesome show in Michigan. Much love to you, brother.
Thank you so much, and what a great venue that is. That's a lot like that Pierre's place as far as it's a big room that holds about 1,800 people, maybe 2,000 people, sells out.
Wow.
But it feels like you're playing to 30 people.
I mean, you're doing rooms like that?
He does huge business in the Midwest.
We had a phenomenal crowd, and the crowd was great. Was the crowd not incredible the other night? I mean, everybody singing along every song. I mean, and just had the best time, and it was great. Thank you so much for calling, man, and we'll see you soon.
You rock, man. Keep up the great work. We love you in Michigan.
Thank you.
Take care of that bar stool there. You got a nice collectible. Let's go to Alabama. Say hello to Shane. Shane, you're on the air with Jesse James Dupree. What's going on?
Hey, Ed. Hey, Jesse. How you doing?
What up, Shane?
What was it like touring with ZZ Top? And do you remember playing a place called Rockingham Palace in Birmingham?
Yes, there's an interesting story.
There's always an interesting story. Let me ask you,
are you going to ask me about the fist fight we got into that night?
I have seen you there twice. Now, that's been a couple of years ago, but it was very entertaining.
But so you're not going to ask about the fight we got into that night?
No.
Okay, all right.
Well, you got in a fight?
No, on stage? Yeah, we were playing at Rockingham Palace, and we got through playing, and we were going to do a meet and greet, but the sound man had a girl in the dressing room, and her husband busted in the dressing room and caught him. Doing unspeakable things to his wife.
Whoa.
And so all hell broke loose. And then my brother, who was our road manager at the time, goes back in, and the security guys end up blind because there was a fight going on. And the security guys blindsided my brother, split his head open. Ooh. I'm outside. I don't know what the hell's going on. I just hear that my brother had just gotten blindsided and his head was busted open.
Whoa.
I get in the middle of it and go, "Who the fuck did this to you?" He said, "This guy," and it was a big son of a bitch. And I didn't even, I busted the guy in the mouth as hard as I could. And since he was so much bigger than I was, I bulldogged him. I grabbed him. I threw my arm up around his neck, and then I just, with all my weight, slung him down to the ground, and I was just grinding his head into the asphalt. And just hoping the guy didn't get a hold of it, because I was a big son of a bitch. Yeah. And I had him, and I'm grinding his head, and I'm busting him in the top of the head. He reaches back behind his head,
yeah,
gets his fingers in my mouth.
Ah.
And whenever they separated us, he pulls me and rips my mouth up inside where my gum and I had crater sized rips up inside my mouth.
Oh.
I mean, it was brutal. Oh. And so then to tie it all together, and this is, swear to God, this is a true story. A couple of years later, we were with ZZ Top, and we were playing at the arena there. And they said, and Tom, the bass player, comes up to me and goes, "That guy you got in the fight with in at that Rockingham Palace is a security guy here." He's,
"No.
What are you going to do about it? You know, what are you going to do?" And they're thinking that I'm going to square off with this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the guy comes around the hall, old venue that we're playing, old arena. He comes around, and the guy was even more muscled up. I mean, he's a big, I said, "Are you that guy I got in a fight with that night?" And he goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Let's don't do that again." And he shut my hand, and we had a great time that night. Wow.
Yeah. Y'all guys kicked ass that night. That was a very good show.
ZZ Top, what an honor to be out with ZZ Top. Yeah. Billy Gibbons. I'm going to tell you this, and I don't want to get hate mail about it, but I literally did not. I never liked Van Halen for the whole first several years that they were out. I love them now. And I look back, and just what a great band. And David Lee, great front man. Eddie, just obviously a phenomenal guitar player. So I'm not saying, but I did. I resented Van Halen for the first several years that they were out, because I did not understand why people just did not know that Billy Gibbons was God. And Billy Gibbons could hit one note and hold it, and it meant more to me than any fret tapping that anybody could do. I love Van Halen stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's how much of a Billy Gibbons fan I was. And to be on tour with Billy Gibbons, you know, I can tell you so many ZZ Top stories. Yeah. But I love those guys.
He's the best, right? He pays everything in $2 bills. He's got the picks.
Well, we would go shopping. I'll tell you one quick story. We'd go shopping, and we'd go into a store, and if he found a jacket he would want, he would go up to the counter, and he would hand the lady his card, and he would say, "I would like 4 of these jackets sent to this address." Yeah. And if she came back and said, "We only got 3, he would take his card back and say, "Thank you very much." And he didn't want 3. He wanted 4.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
if they had 4, they'd send it.
And
that's the way he was with everything.
He gave me his card with his number on it, and his card says, Billy F. Gibbons, friend of Eric Clapton.
Yeah.
That's what it says on his card.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
he hands
yeah,
out
yeah.
to people.
Yeah. He's so cool.
And that's how he feels, obviously, about Clapton.
What a phenomenal guitar player.
Great, great guy, too. A few more minutes here till the top of the hour. Jesse James Dupree sitting in. Dean Del Rey is here as well. Let's go to Oregon right now. Say a little Ryan. Hey, Ryan, you're on the air.
Hey, how we doing?
Hey, man, go ahead.
Good. Hey, Jesse, what was your favorite place to go to a show?
Where's my favorite place to play a show?
To play a show or see a show?
To play at a show. To play at one of the shows.
You know, you find any venue in any stage that's got our intro tape rolling, and that's my favorite place to play. I'm so blessed to play. Like Eddie said, we spent a lot of our time up and down the Midwest, but we were just up in Oregon toward the end of the summer of last year and had a phenomenal show up there. And I think we're going to go back before this year's over. We were up in Portland, and I forget the name of the place we played.
Crystal Ballroom.
Man, you're asking me something I don't even know. We have great shows. I really do. I love playing the festivals, and I love trying to pull them in, but I really like playing those mid-sized rooms that you've got a really huge crowd packed into a place, but it just feels, you know,
it's the best.
You know, I mean, those to me are my favorite rooms, just like what we were talking about with the Traverse City gig on Saturday night, or even the night before that, we played a place called the BMI Speedway, 2,000 people up just on the north side of Dayton, and it was just a blast, packs out, and just people just throw down.
Thank you, Ryan, for the call. Let's go to Vancouver, say hello to Joe. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Ed. Hey, Jesse. Big fan up here in Canada. Just wanted to, first of all, after listening to this for the last half hour, I would pay for a ticket just to sit and listen to Jesse tell stories, I think.
Well, thanks.
Just wondering, Jesse, I know you guys opened some shows. I'm a huge Kiss guy. You opened some shows, I think, on the Revenge Tour. Just wondering if you had a Kiss story. When you were
did you do shows with Kiss?
We've played a couple of shows with Kiss, and we I'll tell you this: we got a call when our first album broke, and they wanted us to open for Kiss in Greenville, which is where Jeff and Chris are from,
right.
Jeff and Chris Worley, and we were excited because we were going to be playing with Kiss, and we go there that day and we set our stuff up and we hit the stage and we had a really great show, a lot of fun. We came off the stage and we walk into our dressing room. And I kid you not, Gene and Paul were both in our dressing room. And Gene was going through my wardrobe case because I had bought one of those Anvil dressing room, you know, had the drawers. In. Gene was going through my damn road case, looking through the drawers and stuff. And so I
for go, what?
I don't know. So we go in.
Probably thought you were on drugs.
I swear to God, on my kids, they're Gene and Paul are in our dressing room, and they're just goofing and being fun, right? And I start talking, and I don't know what the hell I was spewing out. I'm excited because I'm meeting Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. They're in our dressing room. I'm hot, sweaty. I'm just coming off the stage. You know, my adrenaline's still flowing, you know, and I'm just excited. And it seemed like I'd talked for 30 minutes just saying hello. And Gene looks at me and goes, I understand absolutely nothing you're saying. Where are you from? I said, you know, I'm from just down the road to Atlanta. But he ended up being great. But then he says, Paul and I would like to have you guys be on our Kiss tribute record.
Kiss my ass.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
If you see the documentary, you'll see Gene's got the board up there with all the bands and the songs, and they wanted us to do right. I Love It Loud, and our name is on the board and I Love It Loud. But David Berman, who was the vice president of Geffen Records, would not let us be on the record.
Why?
Oh.
Because they said that they did not trust that Gene wouldn't release the song that we were going to do as a single, and it would conflict with our album coming out. Our second album.
Send
them
mixed
out.
Messages yeah. to pull yeah. away and, from and, their own
and
record.
So, and the record companies were so, and so Gene calls me up and I said, Gene, I can't make waves on this because I got to have the label support. And he goes, oh, you need to learn. You've got to just push back and tell them you want to do this. And I said, I do want to do it, but I'm still not. I mean, I'm coming out with a
second record.
I'm a blues-based rock band that's coming out with Nirvana, Soundgarden, Stone Temple Pilots, Alice in Chains, where they're all the flavor of the day.
Right.
Nobody expected us to ever do anything that, you know, as far as for a straight-up rock band, we didn't come out in the 80s. We didn't really fit that thing. We were kind of a throwback to the 70s, and we grew up on ZZ Top and AC/DC and stuff like that.
Sure.
And so, you know, we were just trying to find our place. And so I wasn't really leveraged to make that big of a deal with a record
right.
company. And it was only because the people that still come out and support us to this day that did not let us get swept under the rug. I mean, you know, we broke out of Lincoln, Nebraska, of all places. Gabe Baptista, you know, who you may have remembered, but he passed away not too long ago. But
he broke your single?
He was one of the guys that broke our first single that where they called up and said, what's going on in Lincoln? I said, I've never been there. And they said, we can't keep the records on the shelf. And things just kind of, I mean, there were several other places that were popping up, but we're from the South, you know. And
yeah. That's a great point, though, man. Yeah. These guys came out in the teeth of the scene changing with something that was totally counter to what the hot thing was and still managed to sell a lot of records.
We played up in Seattle, Washington, and the guys in Nirvana was on Geffen as well. So we were all label mates. And they all came out to watch us play, and we break into I Stand Alone. The guys in Nirvana start slam dancing, and security throws them out the door.
Really?
And yeah, and so I'm on stage singing, and I'm singing I Stand Alone, and Cobain and everybody just out the door. And I run over and grab my stage guy during the lead break and scream, they kicked their Nirvana guys out, let them back in, you know, because we were just coming out at the same time. And so they go and get them and brought them back in the back, and they were drinking draft beer out of gallon milk jugs. and we were in the back, and we helped carry Kurt to the car that night. And I mean, it was crazy. And then of course they just, like you said, it was just right at that time where all that music just blew up. And we were very fortunate because we didn't disappear. I mean, we held our own. And
there's a few bands
hang some platinum on the wall and just been thankful to have the support that we've had.
I got under 4 minutes here, and I got to wrap up right to the second, as everybody knows, on this live show before it kicks back into the other programming. So I want to make sure everybody gets in what they got to get in, and I apologize, so many more calls we could take, but going to run out of time here. But first and foremost, Thank you, man, for coming in. This was a nice surprise. You're always welcome to come and hang out whenever you're in New York. Please.
Dean, great to hang with you,
buddy. Oh, man, I'm looking forward to doing comedy out there at the Sturgis.
Well, we'll trade numbers here in a second.
And then, of course, Dean Del Rey sitting with me on both shows today. And, Dean, hit your stuff that you want to plug.
I'm out on tour with Bill Burr for the next 3-4 months. I'll be at Nyack Levity this week with Joey Diaz. Then my podcast, Let There Be Talk, it's in the top 100 on iTunes. George Lynch on this week. Check it out. And the ACDC Bon Scott tribute I'm doing in Hollywood April 3rd at the Avalon. You can get tickets at DeanDelRay.com.
There you go. Jesse, what do you want to tell everybody? Where should people find you?
You go to Jackal.com for the tour dates. Go to Jackal.com to get Jeff Worley's and Roman Glick's cookbook called Dog Eat Dog. Also, grab the No Filter book. It puts all of our records and that kind of stuff. Just get ready to kick it out for a great summer. And Full Throttle Saloon, Pappy Hoyle Campground. Come cramp there. Eddie will be hanging with us this year. We'll make sure of that. Pappyhoel Campground.com for your reservations. Check it out. And Jesse James Bourbon. Please try what I call some liquid America. But again, Eddie, I could talk to you forever, man. You're a great host.
You sell the booze at the shows?
Yeah. Most always we're doing bottle signings. And
wow. Yeah. That's cool.
Hey, and mention you're here because your son has a band that's playing in New York tomorrow. So give your son's band a shout out.
Thank you. I feel like such a terrible dad now. My son, his name is Nigel. Beautiful kid. Looks like his mama. He's playing at the Mercury Lounge tomorrow night with a band called Wayland. W-A-Y-L-A-N-D. Check out their website.
Is he the singer?
And their social media. He was singing and playing his own band. He was out doing dates with Wayland. Kiefer Sutherland and those guys and Jude Cole found the guys in Wayland, had me working with them. So him and Wayland was out together doing shows. His band ended up falling apart. Wayland's band ended up falling apart, and they needed a drummer. And he goes, hell, I'll just play drums for you. So he's been playing drums.
Wow.
And he's a phenomenal drummer.
Wow.
So keep an eye open for that band. It's a rock band, you said. And
great band. Great singer. Mitch can sing his ass off. I hate him. I hate it. Great singer.
So keep an eye open for Wayland, which is Jesse's son's band, playing out there, playing all kinds of great shows too. He was telling me earlier. Well, my thanks to Jesse James Dupree, also Dean Del Rey, for sitting in. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. Jesse is always engaging, always a lot of fun to talk to. Appreciate him swinging by. Glad I was able to bring that to you. Remember, all of my interviews on the podcast originate on my SiriusXM radio shows Monday through Friday live, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time on Volume Channel 106, and also on Monday nights, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern time on SiriusXM Channel 39. Trunk Nation is the name of the show across the board. Got a terrestrial show too, blasting on 30 great radio stations and then some across America and Canada. If you'd like to hear that show, be sure to grab it. And you can do so if you become an all-access member of EddieTrunk.com. Listen to my FM terrestrial show on demand that way anytime you want. This podcast is new every Thursday. Don't forget, if you're in the Dallas area, I'm in McKinney tonight. If you're listening on post day, the 29th of March, at the Guitar Sanctuary, doing my speaking Q&A show. And tomorrow, the 30th, doing my radio show on SiriusXM live from the Guitar Sanctuary, 1 to 3 p.m. Central Time. Tonight, the events start at 8 p.m. Eastern Time at the Guitar Sanctuary. Hope to see if you're in the Dallas area. Be sure to check the homepage of EddieTrunk.com for all my appearances and stuff as it comes in. There's a lot of cool stuff coming up, including just announced later in the year, Dominican Republic 80s in the Sand. Cool event. Check that out. Links on everything on the homepage of my site. Be sure to follow on Twitter as well, at Eddie Trunk. Katie Irizarry is the producer of the Eddie Trunk podcast. Have a great week, everybody. See you next Thursday for another all-new episode.
New to Podcast One, Red Circle Sports with Dennis Miller.
The thing about LeBron is I think he's reached that point now where he realizes maybe the organization, although Gilbert seems like a bit of a shaky cat to me, but I think they realize that they cannot do the full-bore ice capades every night and show the colors. They have to eat it a little once in a while because, quite frankly, it doesn't matter until it gets in the playoffs, right? Until you get in the kill zone. That takes a month and a half.
To hear new episodes each Tuesday from Dennis Miller, subscribe exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, or on the new Podcast One app. Don't forget to review and leave a 5-star rating.